It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. This is kind of a big day today. It's a historic day because today a new president of the United States will be elected. Sorry, couldn't hit that cough button quick enough. Hold on. All right. Anyway, so today it's an historic event. And I just want to get everybody out there voting. This is going to be paramount, right? You need to get out there and vote. You need to vote. I say follow your heart. Follow what makes sense to you. Follow the money that makes sense to you, right? But the most important thing is to get out there and vote. Do not listen to the naysayers who have given up on the process. Get out there and vote. And this is what makes America great. Look, there are literally millions of people who can't vote. And there's hundreds of thousands of people here in America who aren't allowed to vote because they've lost that privilege. So don't take it for granted. It's not a right, it's a privilege, and it can be lost. So I want you to get out there and vote and make things happen. And that's all I'm going to say on that. I think that it's a very, like I said, no matter what, it's going to be a historic day today. No matter what, it's going to be an amazing, amazing day. And I just want you to be out there and vote. It's probably, the most important thing that you can do. All right. What else? What else is on the agenda for today? Well, you know what? I also want to talk about this, call it the selling process, if you will. There's a lot of different selling processes out there. And I want to talk about what makes sense for your company. And it can start with something easy like a greeting. How do you greet your customers? Is it a warm, inviting greeting? And when I say a greeting, I'm not talking about just getting out there and saying, "Hi, my name is Bert. You know, what are you looking for? How can you make that a really great greeting with sincerity, right?" So bottom line is, this first step here is vitally important. It sets the stage for everything. Does that make sense? So you start with your greeting, and from there, you go on to, let's say, call it fact-finding, right? Whatever you want to call it, consultative selling. But bottom line is you want to find out why they're in the store today. Are they shopping for a new car? Why are they shopping for a new car? Why are they looking for new furniture? You know, what is it that brought them in the store today? Motivation is a big deal. And check this out. One of the easiest things, one of the easiest ways to find what has motivated them is to see what motivated them in the past. So if they're buying new furniture today, ask them, you know, what was the last piece of furniture they bought? Why did they buy it? So they may say, "Hey, you know, today we're looking for a, you know, love seat couch scenario." "Oh, that's great. You know, have you, you know, what was, you know, when was the last purchase you made in the furniture area?" "Well, you know, we bought some bedding a while back." "Oh, okay. So, you know, what prompts you to buy the bedding?" "Well, you know, we moved into the house and we want to get a bunch of new furniture." Could be that simple. Or it could be, "You know what, I have a bad back, and so I need to get a new bed." Okay, so is lumbar support important to you? So now you're starting to find some facts that might help you build rapport and make the sale. Same thing with a car, same thing with, whether it's a $100 investment or a $100 million investment, you start finding out what made them do that in the past. and it kind of leads you down the road. So you made the greeting, you find some facts, and then, you know, I always like to explain to people a little bit about the process that we're going to take them through. So, Bob, it's great to see you in the store or whatever. And just to let you know, the way I work is I'm going to try to I'm going to do my best to get you what you're looking for, and then we're going to help you, you know, finance it if that's a thing. You know, we're going to get you from point A to point B or whatever, right? So let them a little know about your process. Here's the key: the more transparent you can be, the better it is for your client. The more they trust you. Does that make sense? The more transparent, the better it is for your salespeople. The more transparent, the better it is for your customers. I mean, for your customer service people. And maybe if you are all of those things, then you really want to keep it simple. Keeping it simple is going to help you immensely. Keeping it simple equals transparency. It also means that you're going to be selling at a faster rate. And I think the client's going to trust you a lot more because they see what's coming up. They know what's going on. They feel involved in the process. Doesn't mean you won't have objections. Doesn't mean you won't have hesitancy. Now, the other thing, speaking of objections, is it an objection or is it a complaint? For example, they may say it costs too much. That's a complaint. You know, Cindy, it does cost a lot, you know, but you probably knew that coming in, right? Ask them that question. You know, if they're buying, again, whether it's a $100 widget or $100 million, you know, people have an idea of what they're going to be investing. For some reason, I got a little tickle in my throat. So I think the first thing you want to figure out is it a complaint or is it an objection? If it's an objection, I can't afford it. That to me is an objection. It costs too much is a complaint. See the difference? I can't afford it. Oh, well, you know, we take credit cards. Oh, okay. Well, let me give you a credit card. I can't afford it. Oh, you know what? We have real simple financing. Oh, great. Let's do that. Bear with me a second. Ah, for some reason, I'm coughing like crazy. So, is it an objection or is it a complaint? So you've greeted them, you've gone through this process, and now you are handling the objections versus the complaints. And you know, one of the other things, again, as much as humanly possible, if you can do this, the better it is for you, and that is to put it in writing. Don't tell them, show them. Right? I don't know if you guys ever experienced that, but when you show somebody something, it carries a little bit more weight. I mean, it really is an unbelievable thing when you're able to show them, here is what it's going to cost you. Here's the financing. And, you know, here's the warranty. Here's the guarantee. Here's what we're going to do for you. Anyway, so I'm just coughing like crazy, so I have to keep hitting that cough button. And I don't know why I'm coughing so much. Grab some water. Keep going. All right. You did the greeting. You did the fact-finding. You've handled the objections. You've handled the complaints. And now you're showing them the nuts and bolts. Right? the written word is still a very powerful thing. The written, you know, the written documentation, I guess, it's a very powerful thing. People like to see as well as hear. Plus, when you show them, it really clears things up. And now you're ready to ask for the order, to take the money, to ask for the clothes, however you language that, right? So that's kind of the process that you may want to look at your process and maybe follow that model and see if that model is better than what you have. Maybe it's something that you can work with. But anyway, we're going to take a quick commercial break, see if I can stop some coughing here, and we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
This is so cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
Mm. I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
And we're going to be talking to Mr. Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman is a highly recognized and awarded businessman. And he's got a very interesting story. I want you guys to listen to this. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, Bert, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, Bill, I know a lot of our listeners may not have heard your story. So before we get into it, and we're going to be talking about how to get out of credit card debt quickly. But before we get to that, give us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your story.
Well, certainly, and I guess we could start with the old standard rags to riches, but everybody's heard those stories so many times, they're almost like chopped liver anymore. So we don't call mine rags to riches, more like rats to riches. We grew up in a neighborhood where there were more rats per capita than there were people. But from there, fortunately, even though I was a high school dropout, spent 5.5 years in high school, I was an alcoholic by the time I was 17, I'm essentially deaf and wear hearing aids to hear about half of what goes on around about me, and grew up on welfare and poverty, and left home when I was 14. I managed to finally get my boat righted, as they would call it. And honestly, Bert, it happened because I met the woman of my life, the lady I met when I was 14 and she was 11. We dated for 10 years, and we've been married now for 36, and I give her all the credit in the world for kicking my rump, so to speak, back to the system. I got a GED. With my GED, I managed to get into college on probation, graduated on probation 4 years later, got into law school on probation, flunked out, got back in, finally graduated on probation, and with that, where Kathy and I have, over the course of our life, we've been blessed and fortunate that we've been able to have some pretty significant business success. In 1986, we went broke. I live in Oklahoma, and we were in the oil and gas business, and the price of oil went from $40 a barrel down to $14, and we went flat, bankrupt, broke, and from there we saw an opportunity, the same opportunity that's going on right now. We saw the economy being in the tank. We saw people being, massive numbers of people being unemployed and banks failing, and so we started buying bad debt. We started buying charged-off credit cards for literally a nickel on the dollar, and with that, over the next 12 years, we created a billion-dollar company. Kathy and I became the 25th wealthiest people in America, members of the Forbes 400, and fortunately, we have won a whole list of business awards, you know, none of which will buy you a cup of coffee anywhere, but they're real pretty when they hang on the wall.
Well, you know, it's good to be recognized by your peers. I think it, you know, it does say a little bit, but you're right. When it comes down to it, it doesn't buy a cup of coffee. So tell us, Bill, you went from literally from rats to riches, as you like to say. You've been married to Kathy for 36 years?
36, yeah, which means she had to get a Purple Heart or something.
That's right. Well, you know, I think it's kind of cool that you give her all the credit. That is an amazing thing, how women can affect us.
Absolutely, Bert. You know, and it's so understated. I mean, you know, the old adage of behind every successful man, there's a woman. Well, that is so much baloney. Kathy has never been behind me. She's never been in front of me. She's always been alongside of me. And people who have great relationships, those are the ones who more often than not are the ones who are great successes in life. So isn't there a lesson there? You know, get a relationship, keep a relationship, work a relationship, and then maybe the rest of your life will fall in place.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's very difficult to have success outside if you're not having success inside the home.
Oh, amen. Absolutely.
All right, well, let's get to it. Tell us about how to get out of credit card debt quickly.
Well, here is the quickest way possible, and it kind of rubs against the norm, and I don't want people to think I'm preaching some kind of financial anarchy or something when I tell them that, but remember now, the business that we created was buying charged-off credit cards, and we bought 4.5 million individual accounts, so I have some background here. What I'm suggesting, for people who are so far underwater that they can't see out, and, you know, that has a different definition for different people, but if you look at your own finances and say, at the job I have right now, at the way things are going, I am so far in. It doesn't matter how you got there. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. But if that's where you're at, you have to look at some pretty extraordinary situations to get out of the hole you're in. And one of the things you can do is, and here it comes, quit paying your credit card bills. Now, when you quit paying your credit card bills, it will hurt your credit rating. Oh, boy, there it is, almost an immediate thing. But the truth of the matter is, Bert, if somebody's that far upside down, they already have hurt their own credit rating. And so one more little ding on it isn't probably going to make a big difference to them. Now, conversely, if your credit is good, you'd never want to do this. But if your credit's already been shot, if you quit paying your credit card bills, here's what happens. And you'll get some phone calls, you'll get collectors calling you, but if you just keep saying no, after 180 days, the credit card company, the bank, has to charge off the debt. That's a rule. That's a law, actually. That's a GAAP accounting rule. And the bank will charge off the debt and then sells those loans, those credit card debts, for as low as a nickel on the dollar to people like me. And when we buy them for a nickel on the dollar, we call up the same customer and we're prepared to settle for, you know, 15 cents on the dollar. So a person who is, say, $10,000 in debt on their credit card right now and can't pay the 10 grand because they just don't have it, they might be able to settle with somebody for, say, $1,500. And the problem is the bank won't let them settle with the bank for $1,500. So that's the one thing they can do. is nothing. Don't pay your bills. And if you don't pay your bills, eventually they will be sold off to someone else who will settle with you for pennies on the dollar.
Well, that's a great strategy. It's kind of like reverse leverage.
It is exactly that. You know, it's kind of the one step short of bankruptcy. You know, when you file bankruptcy because you're so far in you can't get back out, you know you're going to hurt your credit, but you also know you're going to effectuate a solution. You know you're going to make a whole bunch of that junk go away. Well, this is a half step. Now, it's certainly right in line with going bankrupt because it's heading down that path, but it may be the one thing that keeps you from filing bankruptcy, and it would be better to have one or two creditors messing up your credit score as wiping out all of them.
Right. Typically, bankruptcy, and I know the bankruptcy law has changed, and maybe you don't know the answer, but typically bankruptcy tends to stay on your credit for, what is it now, 7 or 10 years?
It is as long as 10 years that it will continue to show up or haunt you, as they say. And yes, I'm familiar with that. In 1986, we filed bankruptcy. So I know again from experience that that is the last straw, last resort, and I don't encourage people to do it unless they just absolutely can't take care of their family, can't take care of their other obligations. There is a higher sense of order here, and that's why the bankruptcy rules were created. You know, not for just to let people run up bills and just say, oh, the heck with it, I'll just walk away from it. No, it's for good, honest, serious, legitimate people who find themselves in a place they never would have imagined.
Sure. And you know, the thing that you just hit on there that people don't realize is that when you start believing that it'll never happen to you, that's when it happens to you.
Oh, and right now, Bert, it's happening to people who have never, ever imagined it can happen to them. See, in the old days, a few years ago, we used to think that people with credit card problems and the people who would think about bankruptcy, well, those are, you know, we would kind of put them in that, well, they must be lazy or they must not have gotten a good education or they probably didn't work very hard. And we kind of put them all in a little category, rightly or wrongly. That's kind of the way we do things. But this time around, in this great recession we're in right now, there are people who did it by the rules. They went to school, they studied hard, they got good grades, they went and got a job, they showed up for work every single day of their life, they went and bought a house with a white picket fence, they married the girl next door, they followed every single rule to follow the American dream, and it turned out that maybe some of that wasn't as true as they told us. And now these are people who have never failed before, have never had difficulties before, and now they're unemployed and not able to pay their bills.
You know, something that you just brought up, I think that this generation is one of those generations that hasn't been tested. This economy is their first test.
It is indeed, and I feel so bad for the people going through what they're going through right now. Now, a guy like me, I'm 61 years old, and I have failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded, and I have screwed up so many times it's almost pathetic. I'm good at failure. I'm good at screwing up. I'm good at getting knocked down and figuring out how to get back up because I've done it a lot. Now, people who have never had it happen to them, it is the most traumatic thing they may experience in their entire lifetime. And quite frankly, some of them may not know how to deal with it.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is failure is a good way to succeed.
It is the only way to succeed. And here's a challenge I give everybody on this call. The Forbes 400 is a list that's published every October by Forbes magazine, so you can go online and get it or wherever you might choose to read it. And read the stories of the people who are on the Forbes 400 list. And except for a few people who inherited some money, and there's usually a handful of them on there, the ones who are self-made, every one of them failed at least once. Some of them failed a half a dozen times. Some of them have filed bankruptcy 3 or 4 times in their life. And that's what it almost takes failure to succeed.
Well, you know, Walt Disney, I believe, filed bankruptcy 4 or 5 times.
Indeed.
And on top of that, his best friend, which is the famous Art Linkletter, you know, gave up on him, wouldn't lend him the $1,000 he needed to buy what is now Walt Disney in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm. No, it, I mean, the stories are, you know, I mean, they're by the thousands. So, you know, when I started, I'm a student of this industry because I try to share what it is I've learned along the way. The very reason you and I are on this call today is hoping that maybe somebody will hear something that might have some value in their life. Well, I began looking at all of the reasons people succeed and the reasons people fail, and I found an awful lot of correlation between having failed and learning a lesson and then going to a much higher success than you ever would have been able to go to but for the failure.
Absolutely. Bill Bartman, thank you very much. This is Bert Martinez. Thank you.
And Bert, you're very welcome. Have a great day.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest, Tom Hopkins. Tom Hopkins carries the standard as a master sales trainer and is recognized the world over as the leading authority on selling techniques and salesmanship. Over 5 million people on 5 continents have attended Tom's high-energy live seminars. Tom personally conducts 30-plus seminars each year traveling throughout the world. He is the author of 18 books, including How to Master the Art of Selling, which has sold over 1.6 million copies worldwide. It is the standard and probably used by just about every salesperson, every sales office, every sales manager in the world. His latest book is titled When Buyers Say No, and it's just burning the charts up. Tom Hopkins, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, Bert, always nice to come back and visit with you and your fine people. Hi.
How's it going? Hey, you know what? I want to kind of jump into this. Speaking of when buyers say no, I want to talk about this because in at least in my experience, to me, it's kind of funny, but sometimes when you meet a buyer or a new potential client, as you like to call them, it's very obvious to me that they have a certain mindset about the entire sales process or salespeople. And, you know, and maybe they've had a bad experience in the past, or, you know, maybe they love the thrill of negotiating. You know what I'm talking about? They walk in, their arms are crossed, their legs are crossed, their eyes are crossed. I mean, they're ready for a fight. You know, what do you suggest you do with this type of individual?
Well, you really hit it on the head as far as our discussion this morning, because I learned over the years, and it wasn't easy to find this out, but when I wrote the book, When Buyers Say No, I realized that is really when selling starts. Before the process of taking some type of no and then having the ability to turn it into a yes, you're really not selling. You're giving information. You're educating the future client. You're letting them know the benefits that you have to offer. You're telling them about your dynamic company and blah, blah, blah. Now, when you go into what we call a test close, where you do some type of asking for them to go further, that is usually when you'll get hit with some type of no. And it's not bad, because most, and of course these are generalities, as you know, Bert, we've done our show many times, but most people cannot write a check or say yes to purchase anything until they have had some type of no handled. And I realized this over the years, my 8 years in the real estate business, that the people that were the hardest to help say yes were the ones that gave you no input and gave you no no's. And those quiet people that just watch, listen, nod their head, but give you no input, they're the toughest ones. And I will say this, the pro realizes that fortitude, which is hanging in there, not just accepting the first no, but using strategy, phraseology, to get them to agree that this is not the real reason that they're hesitating, and then getting them to accept a reason that you can't overcome and handle is really one of the art forms of this wonderful profession called selling.
Yeah, it is, because look, let's be real here. If it wasn't for the objection process, for lack of better terms, right?
Right.
Then salespeople would be out of business. And so you look at something like, let's say, fast food or a pizza. You don't need a salesperson for that. It's, you know, you just need order takers. And you know, I don't want to make that sound, you know, something unimportant. You need good order takers, people who are friendly and bubbly and help the customers and can deliver a good experience for the customer. But you don't need a professional salesperson for that.
No, you really don't. One of our favorite places that we go is Home Depot. And one of the reasons is, being in the business I'm in, I'm so observant of people and how they handle other people. And we have found through many years of going to Home Depot that these people have a service attitude that's above and beyond what many retail organizations offer. And I'm sure I haven't explored it, but I'm sure it's because this is their main training when they hire a person, is almost the attitude of, we'll do anything we have to do to make people happy. And I'm sure whoever is ahead of their choosing their employees has this as the foundation of hiring, to where we want people that make other people feel important, that are good listeners, that ask a lot of questions, and come across with a big service-oriented feeling, which is what consumers really want today. Make me feel I'm getting served, not sold. And that's so important,
yes.
I think, in the field today.
Yes. You know what? And this is one of those, it's almost, what do you call it, a oxymoron, right? That customers love to buy, but they hate to be sold. And again, this is where a good salesperson makes the difference, because a good salesperson, I don't think, needs to resort to a bunch of trickery and high pressure. I think a good salesperson walks a person through the process, lets that person explore the products that they need, and kind of come to their conclusion that this product here is the one I want.
Yes, and I think the great salesperson has three main things that they do. They first of all are always educating the decision maker, giving them information why they're making a wise decision through education. Then the second thing they do is motivate. Now, I call motivation the motive behind the action. Why do people do what they do? And then I think the great salespeople enjoy people and have fun with them. So if you educate, motivate, and have fun, the person opens themselves up. And many of the people that intended to say no, because of the feelings and emotions that you create, suddenly their mind opens up to consider it, to a maybe, then a maybe into a yes, and bingo, you've closed a transaction.
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing is this, I'm a big believer that everybody should be at least a first-level salesperson. And what I mean by that is, you know, somebody looks at you, this is your profession, you're a master sales trainer, and that's what you've dedicated your life to being, your career to being. As opposed to, let's say, a doctor still needs to know how to sell. Maybe he doesn't have to be a salesman, like a salesman trainer like Tom, but he needs to know how to sell. Back to what you're saying, the benefits and the motives, he needs to really be able to help his customers make the right decision. So does a CPA, and so does a lawyer, and so does a server at a restaurant or even whoever. Selling is sometimes, I know a lot of people who don't consider themselves salespeople, but are really good at the selling process.
Well, I can't agree more. This has been something I've been working on all my life, to convince people that selling is a good thing if it's done for all the right reasons. And
yes,
I have two examples here in Scottsdale, Arizona. My dentist, he would always have all of his people, regardless of what they did in the office, come to our seminars because he wanted them to understand the people business, which is sales, understand more how to communicate effectively. And we had tremendous success with his company. I think his dentistry is now retired, but was one of the top in all of Arizona. And then, of course, another example is that was called the Big Four Restaurants, which were four of the biggest, most successful restaurants. And they hired me to come and just teach all of the waiters, waitresses, the clerks, even the cooks. They had them all come together and learn this art form to at least have a degree of knowledge on a first grade level of, again, listening, questioning, the way you establish rapport with the person. And so, again, I think, and one thing I think people have to realize is that most people start off in any selling situation with defenses up. They really intend to say no in the beginning. And so years ago, I thought, I'm going to create a formula that'll help a person to really have, a formula for getting the no into a yes. And it's really called the need, trust, help, and hurry theory. And the basic theory is, Bert, that these four words, need, trust, help, and hurry, you really build them into, I want to first of all find out what they need. Now, the challenge with selling is many salespeople who do not follow this formula, they're selling what they want to sell instead of qualifying as to what the person needs. And there is a difference. There are many people that want something, but it's not good for them because either financially it's not possible or they really won't enjoy it based on what the need is. So I really try to get the people we teach to start off with work and asking questions to find the need, not just the want. In real estate, I have people come in and they start telling me about a home they wanted to purchase. And as I sat there knowing my inventory, I would say to myself, you may want that property, but based on your position, there's no way that'll fulfill you. So again, I had to educate to get their mindset from not what they want to what they need, can afford, and will say yes to. And then the second word is the word trust. And I have always made this a foundation of my teaching, Bert, that if people don't all of a sudden start feeling, I can trust this person. I've not liked salespeople in the past. I've had a bad selling situation. I've purchased something I wish I'd never seen. But all of a sudden, because of the way you handle them, the way you come across, they start putting the defense barriers down, and there starts to be a feeling of, I feel some trust. And that, of course, right. You build on. Then, of course, the third word is help. Most of them start off with, okay, I may want to purchase, but I don't think I need your help. And no one ever wants to admit that they're helpless. However, you can help someone see that you can provide answers in areas where they may not be as educated as you. And after all, you hopefully are the trained professional in your field. So you need to change their mindset to one of, I want some help, and that you're the one I'd like to help me. And then the last word is hurry. And that's, again, today we have such a world of procrastination where many people say, okay, I may want to say yes to this vehicle, yes to this home, yes to this computer, yes to this system, yes to this insurance program, but I'm not in a hurry. So your job is to create some degree of urgency. And the essence is they'll be better off saying yes today than waiting till tomorrow. And that is, again, the art of having them feel I need to take action. Now, if you'll take this need, trust, help, and hurry formula and start applying it, you'll be amazed at how you'll do a better job of finding out what they will say yes to, and, of course, creating that rapport that enables you to move from education, motivation, and fun into closing the sale.
I love that. You know what? And I especially want to focus on the trust step, because ultimately it's the trust that you build that people buy, right? It's really what the exchange is. Once somebody trusts you to say, okay, I trust Bert enough to that I trust that he knows what he's talking about and that he's got my best interest in mind and that he's going to stand behind the sale, therefore I'm going to give him my money.
Well,
and
you know,
that's an amazing thing.
And I think too, Bert, that my last year in real estate, 96% of the people I found homes for or sold their homes for were referred to me by happy people in the past. And I don't think that would happen if you didn't really do or have the ability to create this feeling of trust. And so
yes.
I'm glad that, you know, we spent a little more time on that one word, because when they trust you, they want a rapport with you. They'll want a long-term relationship rather than just one purchase. And the whole key, I feel, to building a successful career in business is to, whatever your business, get a reputation for integrity, honesty, have ethics in your company, and then, of course, have people in the community say, I want to do business with this company because I've heard such good things about them.
Yes. And that's really it. I mean, that is that brand. The people talk about the brand, and to me, brand is what people say about you or your company when you're not in the room. And when people say, yeah, you know, that Tom, you know, Tom Hopkins, you know, that guy, I trust him. I trust him with all my real estate, or I trust him with all my training. That speaks volumes, and that becomes priceless. And when the word gets out there that you're a trustworthy person and that you deliver and that you have follow up, and yes, people are not only going to refer to you, but your fee doesn't become an issue.
Exactly. And, you know, I've tried it. You know, of the 18 books that I've worked so hard to write and get out there, I wrote this one book with a really great guy, Pat Leiby, and it's called Sell It Today, Sell It Now. And in this book, we tried our best to take the 10 steps that people have of sales resistance and then showed how to have 10 steps to get sales acceptance. And it's a book that many of the people, I think, who are maybe searching for some answers might be interested in, of all the books and CDs and stuff that we have to offer at TomHopkins.com. But they may want to look at that, because that is the total basic unit. I've talked about it, but this book, I wrote the whole book on close it today, not tomorrow, get the check today, but do it in such a warm, trusting way that they'll also send you many referrals because they like the way you handle them.
Yes. You know, and this is something I remember from one of your trainings that we did in, I think this took place in Tucson. And I'm going back 20 years, and I remember you training us on, you know, on how to get referrals. And so
right.
And I remember this so vividly because, you know, and again, this is what I remember. So if I'm off a little bit, bear with me. But I remember, you know, it goes something like, Mr. and Mrs. Client, you know, did you have a wonderful experience? Yes. Do you know some other people that might be in the market to buy a widget? And you know, of course, people are hesitant to give you names. And just when you see that hesitancy, you can just say, you know, I'm going to treat them just like I treated you here today. And I remember that so vividly because that says to me a lot. If they say, yeah, you know what, you did treat me well, and here are some names, that says so much about the process, the experience they just had. And a lot of people, you know, when I say people, I should say a lot of salespeople, a lot of professional salespeople miss literally tens of thousands of dollars in sales because they're afraid to ask for referrals, Tom.
Well, and you know what, too, Bert, they should also let the people know. I used to do it right in the beginning. You know, as we get working together, our company has tried to build its reputation on getting people to refer people to us if we make them happy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go overboard to do all I can to make you folks so happy. And if I do, then, of course, the company has asked me to ask you. if there's anyone else we might serve. So I thought I'd let you know that in the beginning. So now I've prepared them. I also think you need to, in a way, I don't like the term blame the company, but you have to let them know the company has asked you to ask people for referrals. So in a way,
I love that.
They have managers asking them to do things, most people do. So here, you're just like them. Upper management's ask us to ask people that are happy with what we've done if there's anyone else in their world that we might serve. And by doing it that way, they let their defenses down and come back to the trust. If they trust you, they'll usually say, well, I've got a couple friends of mine. And, of course, you always have to take them to small groups of people they would know. And like Bert, if you were a bowler, I'd talk about your four bowling buddies. And if you played golf at a golf course, I found out, I'd ask you about some of your golf buddies. Because you have to isolate faces for people to see or they won't think of anybody. And once their minds open up, they'll start seeing faces of other friends and relatives who they can then let you know about.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I love that. I hope everybody picked up on that. Right at the very beginning, you're going to set them up for a referral. And here's something else, you know, that I remember learning from your training material, and that is, even if they don't buy, because maybe it's not a good fit, just like the example you were talking about, you know, that would call it, in some cases, it wasn't the right house for them. You know, it doesn't hurt to ask for a referral anyway. Just because they just, you know, as long as you treat them with, you know, with respect and they trust you, they're still going to refer to people. They're still going to refer people to you because they're buying the experience. They trust you. Therefore, they're going to refer people to you. It's so not true. Because they're buying that they're referring people to you. It's because they trust you that they're going to refer people to you.
Exactly right. Right on the head. Right. Beautiful.
So it's an amazing thing. And again, like you were saying, and you can use the company or the manager or the supervisor's authority to say, hey, you know, our company wants this. You know, company wants me to ask you for a referral. So after we're done today, I'm going to ask you for a referral. I think it's a fantastic setup because it's expected. And like you said, you're pairing them up. This is a great way to predict the future, so to speak.
Well, and one thing, too, I'd like the folks that are really going to try to apply this, don't use the word referral. I think it'd be better to use quality introduction, meaning, of course, some people are turned off by giving referrals. So I always teach our folks that, you know, let them know that the companies ask you to ask for some quality introductions to some other people we might serve. Now, they didn't hear the word referral, but it's the same in essence thing. And at the end of the presentation, you can say, as I mentioned in the beginning, the company would like to have me ask you for some quality introductions to two or three people that you might know, friends, relatives, associates at work, that we might serve.
I love it. I love it. We're going to end on that note, Tom. It's been such an enjoyable process today. It's such a great conversation. It's always good to have you on the show. I hope that you guys put these ideas and these suggestions and this training really to work today. If you want to find out more about Tom and grab some of his audios, grab some of his training, or grab some of his free stuff that he's got, you can go to TomHopkins.com. TomHopkins.com, a wealth of information to build your company, build your sales force. Tom Hopkins, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing today.
Always great, Bert. All the best, my friend. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye-bye. Good stuff there from our friend Tom Hopkins, the epitome of a master sales trainer. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Linda Maloney. Linda Maloney is an award-winning author, business owner, speaker, and former military aviator and an officer. She spent 20 years in the Navy and was one of the first women in the U.S. history to join a combat military flying squadron in 1933 and received numerous military awards, including the Distinguished Air Medal for Combat. Linda started the for-profit company Women Veteran Speakers in 2015 and is the first speakers bureau and booking agency for its kind of offering exclusively exceptional women military veterans as event speakers, trainers, and coaches and facilitators. Linda Maloney, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be on the show.
Well, you know what? From a marketing perspective, I'm excited to have you on the show to talk about this because this is what, you know, in the marketing field, we talk about a very niche product, right? It's a niche offering. This is women veteran speakers. So obviously you have to be a veteran and a female, a woman, to be even considered to be represented by your bureau.
Absolutely. That's, you know, one of the basic qualifications. But, you know, one of the interesting things, even though all the women are veterans, they all have accomplished careers after the military. And the Speakers Bureau, even though we call ourselves Speakers Bureau, we also offer women coaches, trainers, facilitators. And the women, you know, they don't speak to just veteran or military-related organizations. They also for example, my members are very diverse. I have, you know, for example, right. One of our members has a doctorate in economics. Another, several of them are published authors, and many of them own their own companies. And so, so our market is pretty, you know, widespread. Although, you know, we have, you know, sliced out a piece of the market. We're trying not to be too wide, too big, and we are a niche company. But, yeah, our market, we look at potential clients in corporate, universities, colleges, and obviously also military and veteran-related type of events.
I love it. I love it. This is I think, a very exciting organization. And like I said, I'm excited because it's very unique. And I think a lot of people always try to, you know, as you mentioned, try to go really wide. Let's go wide. Let's get, and so you're saying, hey, you know what, we're going to be focused on this. So let's talk about this. You know, address, if you will, the landscape of women veteran entrepreneurs. I mean, describe, you know, who is, let's say, a veteran entrepreneur, a woman veteran entrepreneur, for example.
Well, just to give you some, you know, perspective, as of 2012, the Small Business Association published a report, a study, and there are approximately 21 million veterans overall. 1.8 million
wow.
of them are women. So, you know, not a big percentage, but 1.8 of them are women. And another metric is that 1 in 10 small businesses in the United States are veteran-owned. And out of those businesses, there's over 384,000 women-owned businesses. And the interesting thing about this, and the study showed this, that they did a study from 2007 to 2012, and there were actually was a 300% increase in women veteran-owned businesses, which is just amazing. I mean, that's such a great number, you know, and then in terms of geography, the top five states with the highest number of women veteran-owned businesses are in order. You have California, Texas, Florida, and New York.
Wow. Wow.
So, but
you, know,
then, you know, there is a challenge,
a huge number.
In all that, but, you know, even though there are that many women veteran-owned businesses,
yeah.
compared to their male veteran-owned counterparts, women veteran-owned businesses have a lower receipt, lower revenue. So, you know, they're really trying to find out why and what steps can be taken to accelerate those businesses.
Gotcha, gotcha. So let's talk about this. Are there specific skill sets learned in the military that offer advantages to entrepreneurs? Talk about that.
So I, in addition to running the Speakers Bureau, I also do speaking, and one of the keynotes that I give to specifically veteran organizations, veteran associations, is that as a veteran, you have a unique advantage, you know, as a veteran that equips you on your professional journey because of your military service and your veteran status. Veterans understand teamwork, camaraderie, the importance of mission achievement, and, you know, and let's not forget the, you know, day-to-day hands-on leadership management training that all people in the military learn. And so that's true whether you were in the military for 4 years or 24 years. And so those, you know, those characteristics such as resilience and discipline and focus, willingness to collaborate, you know, which is teamwork, and, you know, those are all skills that are life-saving on the battlefield, and they're also winners in the business world.
Yeah. you know, the what do you call it? What's interesting to me is, and there are so many skill sets that people are able to tap into and really learn and discover in the military, right? That, that sometimes we don't have those opportunities in, let's say, in the civilian world. And there are a couple of European countries that they expect all their young people to serve in the military for at least 1 year. And I always thought, you know, that's not a bad idea to have everybody kind of understand what discipline's all about, what teamwork's all about. And maybe it's a 2 year stint, but it's not a bad idea to have young people experience that.
Well, I think it's important that, you know, not just with the military, but with any type of volunteer effort, is that you're giving to something that's bigger than you. And that,
yes.
It, you know, I think, it, you know, and you're looking outside of yourself, and I think it broadens your views of life. And I think any volunteer, you know, large volunteer efforts, whether it's the military, the Peace Corps, you know, other volunteer opportunities, is such a benefit to young people. And,
yeah,
you know,
no,
let me,
go ahead.
I mean, I always say that the military gave me way more than I gave it. And I would have really done it for free. I flew in the military. Like you had mentioned before, I was one of the first women when the combat exclusion law was repealed back in 1993 to join a combat squadron. And I would do it all over again. I loved it. It was the military just gave me such great opportunities, great skill set, leadership, teamwork. It's just, you know, it's a level playing field for anyone, whether you're a man or a woman. And if you do a good job and you work hard, you're rewarded and you do well.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Listen, we only got a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask you this. What are your key tips for growing your business?
Well, I, as a small business owner, and, you know, we're very focused on operating expenses. And
right.
One of my primary, everything that I look at when we decide what we're going to spend our money on is low cost, no cost. And I look at everything with that perspective in mind. And so I wouldn't say that I'm cheap, but I definitely am focused on the economics. That's one really, key, because everyone's trying to sell you something. I mean, as a small business owner, you know, everyone's trying to sell you something. And so you have to, first of all, number one, my first key tip is to figure out, you know, what you're good at and what you need to pay for to outsource. Because most people are not good at everything. And, you know, that's probably my number one key tip is to figure out what you can do yourself and what you need to outsource to. And then the second one is to, you know, figure out, you know, low cost, no cost, because there's so many, especially with the internet and social media, and, you know, especially with marketing, you know, figuring out what you can do, low cost and no cost. And also one other key tip is pursue your advocate marketing. I was just listening to the person before you. It talked about quality introductions. And to me, that equals, you know, advocate marketing. And because word of mouth marketing is so powerful. So that's my other key tip, is really pursue your advocate marketing and those quality introductions.
You know, and something else that not only, first of all, not only, Linda, is everybody trying to sell you something, but as a small business owner, and even a medium-sized business, you're constantly looking ways to make your business better, improve sales, and so you're constantly looking for something, right? And I call it, you know, it's the gateway to the shiny object syndrome. Oh, you know what? Let me get this new tool so my social media can improve. Oh, let me get this new tool so whatever. And so before you know it, you have $200 or $300 or $400 a month going out, or $1,000 a month going out, that isn't really returning anything to the bottom line. And back to managing by numbers, as you're talking about, sometimes this is a lot of people, quote, don't like to manage by numbers because they think it's so unemotional. But to me, it's the perfect way to manage, especially when you're tight on your budget. Managing by numbers really helps you cut out a lot of BS. And yes, you would like to do a lot of things, but if it's not going to bring an immediate ROI, then maybe you shouldn't do it.
Right. And I try to look at everything, you know, everything that we decide to do with the business through that lens. And
yes.
Because you're right, I want to do everything, you know. But it's exciting. I love it. I feel like I'm in the trenches right now in building our business. But I enjoy it. I really do.
Absolutely. Linda, we're out of time. I'd love to bring you back and talk not only about the womenveteranspeakers.com, where you as a business owner can go out there and find some women veteran speakers who can help you on any subject. Just go out there to womenveteranspeakers.com. But Linda, I'd love to bring you back, talk more about business and marketing. Linda Maloney, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Great. Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. Good stuff there from Linda Maloney, and I love the idea of finding out who you really are and then really manage by those numbers. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.